Welcome to Steel and Maz, Mass Music Radio's Pioneer Podcast. We're located in Quincy Point at the Mass Music Radio headquarters. In here on a Sunday night, joining us tonight, Boston sports journal Celtics beat writer John Corrales joins the show to talk about the first half of the C's up and down season, along with what's ahead for the Green after the All-Star break. We got into a couple other teams around the NBA, title predictions, hot shot, right?
Top shot.
Top shot, sorry.
Which he shit on, but apparently he doesn't like making money.
We got everything you need for Celtics Insight and NBA stuff. Also joining us on the show, guy sitting next to me on the mic, worked with me at the Patriot Ledger, has a bunch of sports media experience, Sean O'Callaghan. John O'Callaghan, what's good tonight?
Thanks for having me on, guys. Excited to be here.
Excited. Love it.
I'm shocked they let you sit in that seat. I really am.
Yeah. I'm surprised, too.
Never thought I'd see that.
I mean, you called in a couple weeks ago, and they fucking hung up on you.
Because he absolutely deserved it.
It's not the first time. Won't be the last.
I even give you credit for coming in after that, the way they treated you. I did not okay that.
Oh.
I'm happy to have you here, Sean.
Thanks, babe.
Afterwards, the boys are going to be all over the place in the sports world. We'll have our takes from last night's crazy UFC 259. Tom Wilson suspended 7 games for his hit on Bruins D-man Brandon Carlo. We'll have our takes on that and a whole lot more other stuff. We have another quality show incoming, so hang loose. Here we go. BSJ Celtics writer John Corrales. Yep. We are now joined by Boston Celtics writer for the Boston Sports Journal, John Corrales. How's it going this evening?
It's going great. How are you doing?
We're doing good. You know, just living like we can here in 2021. Before we get to the Celtics talk, which obviously there's been a lot of ups and downs in the first half of the season. But I just wanted to know a little bit more about you. So from my research I did, you used to be a former player, right?
Yeah, I was. I played one season in Greece before my body gave out on me, and I played at Emerson College in Boston.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. So that's a big journalism school too. So I'm sure that's the route you were taking there.
Yeah.
So just tell me a little bit about what made you, in the sense, I know you went to the school of journalism there, but what gave you the drive to go from the court to the press box?
Yeah. So when I was in high school, I always knew that I felt comfortable talking. I felt comfortable around sports. Obviously, I was an athlete in high school, and I played 4 or 5 different sports over the course of my time there. So I loved playing sports, talking sports, writing about sports. Like, I liked all that stuff. So it felt like a pretty natural progression for me to say, hey, there are people who do this for a living. And yeah. I wanted to be the next, like, sports center anchor at that time. And so that's why I decided to go into broadcast journalism. And I decided on Emerson. I was trying to decide between Syracuse and Emerson. I just basically decided to on Emerson because it was closer to home.
Yeah,
I'm
from Rhode Island. So I thought, being closer to home, closer to my family and all of that, but going to school in Boston would be great. And it was a lot of fun. And then, from there, it was a long kind of winding road, because I did a lot of behind the scenes stuff on the news side. But, after I started out the RedsArmy.com blog in 2006 with my buddy Chuck McKinney. And then from there, just kind of slowly built up a following, slowly built up, a reputation, and eventually, through the podcasting and the writing and all of that stuff, did enough where, I got big enough where I was able to kind of show mainstream outlets that they should be hiring me.
Yeah, the real deal. Exactly.
No, I was wondering where the origin Red's Army came from. So you gave us the description there. So I was
so Red's Army was the blog, and we decided we were trying to figure out what to name it. And so Chuck and I were like, all right, well, what are Celtics fans? Like, if you're a Celtics fan, who are you? And we said, well, if you follow the Celtics, then you follow Red. Red is our leader. In a sense, he is our general. And that means that we are all part of Red's Army. So Red's Army was, in a way, it's what we thought of Celtics fans as. So that's what we named our site. And when I first joined Twitter, however long ago that was, obviously I kept the handle. Once you get verified, you can't change it without losing the name. So I haven't figured out how to change it. But I like keeping it because that's how people know me. Uh-huh. But yeah, that's
at this point too, you just gotta let it ride. Yeah.
Yeah, the brand at this
point. I mean, at some point I'll probably change it once I figure out how. Because, you know, as a journalist now, as a full time, you know, I cover the team full time. I really can't have like any sort of like, yes, I grew up a Celtics fan, but like I have to be able to watch games objectively and tell people what I think objectively. And so I do want to make sure that there's no appearance that everything that I do is just rah, rah, let's go Celtics. Uh-huh. I want them to do well because I cover the team. And if I were to get a job in Indiana with the Indy Star covering the Pacers, after a while covering the team, you'd say, you know, I want these guys to do well because I see the grind that they put in every day. So you naturally want to see these guys kind of like figure it out and succeed. But yeah.
So you have to put the green teamer kind of on hold while you're, you know, doing this full-time job here you're getting paid to do for. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can't sit there and just like, I can't cheer for anything anymore. And really, as you get older, I don't know how old you guys are, but I'm 47. So as you get older, that extreme reaction starts to fade away kind of anyway. Because you start to realize, like, okay, it's really not that important. As you get older,
there's
and
more
the bills
important,
pile yeah. up, mm-hmm. yeah, and you're like, I'm not going to lose my mind over 2 missed fourth quarter free throws because, you know what, I got, you know, a couple of kids, you know, running around and, you know, what all this other stuff. So it tempers out over age anyway. But, like, when I watch a game, I'm watching a game to see what happens, not in anticipation or rooting for anything to happen. I'm watching to see what happens so I can know what to ask, know what to write about, figure out what I want to break down and all of that stuff. So there's just no room for fandom in that. Yeah. I have to be pretty technical.
Unbiased, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, that's good. That helps you. I mean, I was ready to throw my TV out of my house the past, like, 2 weeks.
Before the 4-game winning streak.
Jesus.
Right. And see, that's the thing. That's a great example because I have to look at that and, like, I have to be the one to tell you, is this real or is this not real? Should you really throw your TV out the window or should you, like, leave
not.
It on the bracket and just, hey, chill out for a second?
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, in the moment, people will kind of criticize me for some of the takes because I don't have the same emotional reactions that they do. But that's my job. My job is when everything's going to shit or when it's going better than ever, I have to look at that and tell you for real. Is this legit? Is what we're watching sustainable? Is what the particular players are doing? Is that something that really works long term? Is it just a matter of these guys being hot and or cold? Like all of that stuff. So I have to stay impartial and try to keep a level head so I can be accurate in what I'm telling you.
Yeah, so you don't want to tell us what we want to hear. You're kind of telling us what we have to hear.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. That's the name of that game. That's my goal. Uh-huh. I really want to tell you what I see as actually happening. And not just trying to be like, hey, here's going to get me clicks. Like
a Skip Bayless or a
Nick Wright.
Know. Yeah, I can't be that. That's not my personality at all.
No.
Like, good for them, I guess. But, like, I absolutely 1,000,000% cannot do the Skip Bayless thing. I just can't.
You're
make me sick.
Your colleague Bedard, when he was on here, he said the same thing. That he's not. He would have been Skip Bayless a long time ago if he could.
Right. I mean, if you can. I mean, I've seen behind the scenes. Some of these people, you know, without naming names, because I don't want to call people out, like, this is your job, and that's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen people say, okay, what side do you want to take? To me, I can't bring myself to be like, oh, I'm going to argue that Jaylen Brown should be traded when I don't believe that Jaylen Brown should be traded. No. You know, but these people want to go out there and put on a performance. Hey, more power to you. That, to me, that gives me, like, the more people like that are out there, the more that allows me to do what I do because I'm the counterbalance to that. You know, they're the yin, I'm the yang. Like, there has to be both.
Yeah. It makes journalists like you, like, way more credible when your Max Kellerman talking about Tom Brady falling off a cliff for the 14th straight year. I don't know.
Yeah. Right. I mean, eventually he's going to be right.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But like, you know.
He can't wait for that moment, too. Hopefully he falls off a cliff before he gets to be right.
He's been waiting to take that victory lap for a decade.
And he just can't get it.
He picked the wrong guy.
Well, we'll get into the Celtics talk now. So what I'm seeing, so 19-17, a little bit better than it was a couple of weeks back. Fourth in the Eastern Conference. I think they're 5.5 now out of the first place. I just want to know what your take kind of the state of the team. Obviously, the Jays are the catalyst. But, you know, Kemba really struggled early on in the season, coming back off injury. But now I think he's really starting to strive, right? Would you say that?
Yeah, I think Kemba is really starting to figure things out. Like, and this is why I was telling people to be patient, because, you know, I saw some people saying, you know, things like Tim Bontemps had a piece and he quoted an executive who was like, I'm surprised that Kemba's not doing better. And I wanted to like find that executive and be like, what are you not? Are you not paying attention to what's happening? Like the Celtics, I feel like, were one of the most impacted teams by the short turnaround.
Oh yeah.
Because they had, obviously they were in the conference finals. So you look at, you know, the teams that were in the conference finals in the finals, you know, Miami, Boston, LA, Denver, like LA only because they had LeBron is the only one that wasn't affected, but all the other teams struggled. They had a plan for Kemba that was based on a later start. When the Celtics were losing to the Miami Heat, like in the final days of that series, Adam Silver was on CNN saying, I don't anticipate the season starting until 2021, some point in January or later. So the Celtics, once that series was over, started their planning based on that. And that impacted Kemba. So Kemba, instead of coming back and ramping up, was suddenly missing games. And it impacted the Gordon Hayward thing, because instead of a longer offseason, everything was condensed. So Gordon Hayward had to make a decision faster than usual because the money was drying up super fast. And so Danny Ainge didn't get an opportunity to fully negotiate a trade. And then once that fell through, all the other free agents were like flying by. So he missed some chances there to get players that he might have wanted. And that all had an impact in how this early part of the season went, on top of cramming that season together, cramming all those games into February after a few games were postponed. Like, all of that stuff had a big impact. So the Celtics that we see now, I don't even think that the second half Celtics are going to resemble the first half Celtics, because you're going to have Marcus Smart with Kemba. Yeah. Which we haven't really seen much.
Yeah, like
we're going to have potentially Romeo Langford in there getting minutes. We're going to see a lot of these things that
we didn't get
in the first half.
But so, I feel like, too, when they lost Marcus Smart, I mean, you point out that, yeah, he's the heart of the team, but it really showed with, I don't know, their inconsistencies throughout the month of February, really, you know, string a couple wins together.
Yeah, you need Marcus Smart. I mean, not just because he could defend, and maybe like in that Dallas loss, he checks Luka. You know, there's that kind of stuff, but also you need him as a guy to organize the defense, that when the guys are making mistakes and slipping, he's like a coach on the floor to get guys organized and tell them where they need to be.
Yep.
It's also important to have him as an organizer on offense. Like, he can run the point. He can run pick and rolls. He can get you where you need to be when on both sides of the floor, when guys are kind of, you know, their heads aren't there. So look, not having Marcus Smart for that February run was brutal.
Yeah.
There's a website called Man Games Lost that they use a formula of like win shares and whatever. It's not a perfect science, but they say that the Celtics were the fifth most impacted team by injury in the first half, and they lost four games due to injuries and stuff. So instead of 19-17, imagine if they had actually won those four games and were, what's that, 23-14 you know what would happen there? They'd be a half game ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, especially and with the Eastern Conference this year in terms of the record, yeah.
So as crazy as it's been, as brutal as February was, and that's the darkest point this season, we hope, they're still in a good spot. 19-17, you're in fourth, you're alone, you're five games out of the lead, you're three games behind Milwaukee. There's striking distance, and it's not going to be easy, but if you get a little bit of good luck, and we actually saw a little bit of good luck at the end in that four-game winning streak, if some of that actually carries over and these guys finally catch some breaks, then the second half could actually not be so bad.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, they definitely deserve some luck at this point.
I think something has to be said, too, when your GM, Danny Ainge, goes on the radio and says this roster isn't good enough. I think they have some good star power. But, you know, a couple of these guys off the bench, I've liked what Ojale has done this year, but there's a couple other guys that just I don't think even deserve to have a roster spot. Do you think they're going to make moves here, or do you think they're going to sit tight and, you know, wait for Marcus to come back and really wait for Kemba Walker to come in the full form of himself?
Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be a move. I don't think it's going to be the big move that people are anticipating. And I'm starting to just believe that there'll be some tinkering. I don't want to say tinkering around the edges. I think it'll be a move that's somewhat significant, but not like blockbuster. Because I really, really do think the Celtics are concerned about the tax. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily that they don't want to pay the tax this year. It's that they don't want, like, what they want to do is reset the repeater tax. And I don't know how familiar you guys are with the repeater tax, but the luxury tax starts at, the regular luxury tax starts at $1.50 for every dollar you're over the cap, over the tax line for the first $5 million. And then it goes up to $1.75 and then 25 cents up each $5 million increment. The repeater tax, which you pay if you're a taxpayer 3 out of 4 years, in that fifth year, you start paying a repeater tax that starts at $2.50.
Oh, wow. Is it really breaking down the numbers here, huh? Wow.
Yeah. So your tax bill goes up by about 67%.
Oh,
so
two-thirds.
Yes. So now, do the Celtics care necessarily about paying the tax? No, not really. If they've got a good team and they think they've got a chance, they'll pay a tax. But if they don't pay the tax this year, then they reset the repeater tax clock because they didn't pay it last year. And so by not paying it 2 years in a row, there's no way they could pay it 3 out of 4 years. So next year would be year one. You follow me?
Yeah.
So you do next year is year one. Then you've got to do the full 4 years. Jeez. And then it's that fifth year that you pay the repeater tax. So it's super, super important to not pay that tax this year because it gives you basically 4 full seasons of not paying the repeater tax. Mm-hmm. And
got to pay your taxes, people.
Extension.
I would say most fans
Jalen's extension
don't know that.
Is in. Next year, Tatum's extension starts. You're paying Marcus Smart. You're paying Kemba Walker. You're theoretically trading for somebody with that trade exception.
I was
going to
say, the trade exception has to, you know, be a big bonus for the Celtics when we're talking about this in terms of, you know, getting guys at the deadline, right?
Yes. Yeah. So here's what I think happens. I think they make regular, normal trades this season. Like, if they do trade for somebody, they're sending players out. They're not touching the trade exception. And then I think once the season is over, then they are cramming to try to get that trade exception and get a good player in. So that player could still be like a Harrison Barnes, but maybe not at the deadline. Maybe they're looking for that player over the summer. And one other thing to consider is they could, in a funky way, extend the trade exception by using it to acquire a salary dump, okay?
Yep.
To take salary from another team that the Celtics aren't going to play, but fits into that trade exception because now that person is an expiring contract, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then instead of the TPE expiring, they've got a player that they acquired via the TPE that just sits at the end of the bench, is a contract, and they use that contract to try and match salary in a normal trade at some point before the deadline.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So a lot of these things like have to come in order in order to, you know, whether it's to get a guy in the offseason or it's to get a guy at the trade deadline. Well, let me ask you this. Is there anyone in particular that, you know, I know you said Harrison Barnes, but anyone you think that comes to mind where, you know, they have a realistic shot they're looking at? I saw there was Jeremiah Grant and then the center from the Magic, correct?
Nikola Vucevic.
Nikola Vucevic, yeah.
Vuce, yeah. So I don't think Vuce is a candidate because of all that insane tax stuff that I talked about. Because Vuce makes, I want to say, $24 million this year. So you can acquire him via trade exception. But first of all, they're hard capped with at the apron, which is $138 million. So they can't add Vucevic, who, let's see here. Nope, that's not right. They can't add Vucevic because that brings him up over the apron. He makes $26 million. So he fits, but you can't just take on his salary. So you have to send money out. And
so you have to give the Magic money back?
Yes, because you can't take $26 million because they are 20 or $19 million below the hard cap. So you have to at least clear $7 million. And by acquiring Vucevic, you are over the luxury tax. So the question is, does Tatum, Brown, and Vucevic make you the contender? Does it push you into that realm with Brooklyn and Philly and those guys?
I was just about to say, I mean, you said Brooklyn. Not when you have a team with Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Kevin Durant. It just doesn't match up.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So
Blake.
This is why I'm starting to like feel like the big TPE move isn't happening. Because getting Vucevic, it's going to be hard for the Celtics to do that and stay under the tax. It's going to be very, very difficult. And if you're not going to stay under the tax, then they're not going to do that deal. Because next year's team is going to get mega expensive, like super, super expensive. And Vucevic is like 30-something. He doesn't fit the timeline. I don't buy it. Jeremy Grant, forget it. He's not getting traded.
Really?
Like people look at Detroit and they say, oh, bad team. He's the best player in a bad team. They might as well trade him to get some pieces. But he chose Detroit knowing that they were going to be bad. And Detroit signed him. He wanted to be in Detroit because he wanted to play for a black coach and a black executive in a majority black city. Like he had a very intense personal reason to join that particular team.
Did not know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why he wanted to go to Detroit. Like, why would you leave Denver to go to Detroit? He wanted to be the man.
Yep.
And he wanted to be the main player in that situation. That's something that was very, very important to him. So
I think Blake Griffin
him
tried
to Boston
that once
would
there,
be like, what's that?
I said, I think Blake Griffin tried that with the Pistons too, and it clearly hasn't worked out.
Yeah. So like,
not looking good over there.
I don't think trading him to Boston would be great. I don't think it would go well. I don't think he kind of wants to be here because it'd be like just being like in Denver. You might as well have stayed in Denver in that case. So
coming off the bench.
It's not worth it for him. And I think Detroit should keep him because he's like a culture guy. Mm-hmm. You've got all of these young players in Detroit, and Detroit sucks. And you need veterans to be like, you know what? I chose to be here. I need you to be with me on this team to grow so we can build something. You look at what's happening in Atlanta with Trae Young and Cam Reddish and Lloyd Pierce getting fired. And all of that intense kind of like relationship that didn't work.
Yeah.
No veteran guy, no culture guy there to be like, hey, we're here. We're trying to do something. And I chose to be here in Atlanta. Jeremy Grant's that culture guy in Detroit. Mm-hmm. They would be stupid to pass that up because
that's
threatened the whole thing.
Not me, but just a side subject here. So we're talking about the Hawks. You don't think Rondo would be that type of guy? I feel like he's the... I mean, clearly not, but I think that he has this type of culture in there now.
I don't think Rondo's that kind of guy. Rondo's bounced around. Like, he's played for, like, half the league at this point. And he's not out there. He's not out there performing in the regular season. Like, he's coasting in the regular season.
Yeah,
like
just
he's
winging it.
Yeah, so that's not the right culture guy. He's Mr. Turn It On in the playoffs, which is fine, but that's not the culture guy that you want.
Going back to what you were talking about earlier about the trade deadline, it kind of seems like no matter who they acquire this year, is not really going to put them over the top in terms of the playoffs, in terms of when you get into the postseason, the bench is shortened. It's more of a superstar-driven league at that point. That's sort of one of the criticisms I have about Brad, particularly in the regular season. It seems like all he tends to rely on his bench a lot compared to other players. I mean, not to go to one extreme like Tom Thibodeau, where he wears out his starters, but it seems like he relies on his bench a little bit more than other coaches. But I guess that kind of goes back to the point about Danny not really having the guns in the bullet to make off like a bench trade. Like last year, fans were sort of clamoring for like a small bench move, like a Davis Bertans, kind of like a three-point sniper. You look at the cost around the league, Miami picked up, you know, sort of key bench guys like Jay Crowder, Andre Iguodala, that played kind of pivotal roles in the Eastern Conference finals. Danny hasn't made an in-season trade since Isaiah Thomas back, I don't know how many years ago it
2015.
Was, but it seems like it's sort of reached a breaking point. Even just from a PR perspective, fans are clamoring for him to make a move. I think it kind of, even though it may not be like a Jeremy Grant or Nikola Vucevic, someone like you said before, a Harrison Barnes, just to give some injection of life into this team.
Yeah, I mean, this is the dichotomy between fan expectations and GM expectations. And what is the GM trying to do? It gets complicated. And the problem is, a lot of fans just, they don't want to hear the answers. They don't want to hear me say what I'm about to say, which is taxes. It does take, you mentioned Davis Bertans. Well, he was never really available because the Washington Wizards gave him a big contract. You know, he got, what did he get here? A 5-year deal? What's that? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He was at $70, $80 million worth of, in that deal. Like Danny Ainge wasn't going to do that. And Washington valued him pretty highly. They valued him highly enough to give him a 5-year contract or 4 years plus a team option. But that's not a guy that was going to get traded.
Yeah. Another one was Jimmy Butler. Like we were going to get him like 6 off seasons in a row.
Right. And then those become, oh, you didn't get Jimmy Butler, and people like to laugh at Danny Ainge. But every Jimmy Butler deal would have required Jaylen Brown. And exactly. I think everybody's pretty comfortable with getting Jaylen Brown now.
I would say so, too, being a first-time All-Star here.
I understand that Danny Ainge sometimes, I think, holds out for the perfect deal. And that may hurt him. I think there was, if you remember, I'm sure you do, the Justice Winslow pursuit.
Right. Yep.
A few years ago.
Yep.
Where Danny Ainge was willing to give up like everything for Justice Winslow. And luckily for him, Michael Jordan was like, nope, don't want to do it. Don't want to swap places with you. We want Frank Kaminsky, and that's it. And so they just – so
ouch.
Winslow
– yeah, yikes.
Right. So they kept Frank Kaminsky. And, like, that was, I think, the Jaylen Brown pick, right? Like, that was – Danny Ainge was so enamored with Justice Winslow that all of these things, like, multiple first-round picks. And then I remember him coming out of there and said, we might have gone too far. Like, I forget the exact terminology, but, like, literally he said something in that – in some sort of phrasing like that, like we might have gone too far. It might not have been a bad thing for this to not work out. And so since that moment, I think Danny Ainge is like that scared him straight. And he's not going, he has a value. He knows what he's going to pay for a certain guy. And if a team tries to bilk him, he is just not going to do it. And maybe he skews a little too far the other way, but that combined with teams just have to want to actually trade the guys that you're calling for him to trade for. Like I can say he should probably go get Terrence Ross. And if they don't get Terrence Ross and Terrence Ross doesn't get traded, that means that Terrence Ross wasn't really available. And so I can't be like, I can't believe he didn't go get Terrence Ross. Just like there are people who say, I can't believe he didn't get Davis Bertans. They signed him long-term. Like that's all of that plays into this. So that's all of that is to say that I understand the frustration with Danny Ainge, And some of it is warranted because, yeah, the Celtics could use some help. And I think he does have the assets to get some help. But at the same time, I don't think fans understand the long-term implications of trading away some of these assets, you know, looking ahead to some potential future first round, some future potential free agents that the Celtics say, look, we'll deal with this year, we'll deal with next year. And, you know, in 2023, when that offseason where Bradley Beal can opt out, we're going to become as strong a player as we possibly can to get Bradley Beal and pair him up with his friend, Jason Tatum. And that plays into it. So if we trade for Terrence Ross right now, we can't do that deal or something like that. So there's a lot to consider.
And stating the obvious that Danny Ainge is going to do what's best for the Boston Celtics, not really what some fan at the bar or something is saying what they should do, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, Danny Ainge should have made like 600 trades the last like 3 years if he listened to him.
Right. Right. And no offense, like to the guy who just, you know, parked his plumbing truck and walked into a pub and is like screaming about how Danny Ainge should run the Celtics. Like, that's what sports are for. But at the same time, that's not how sports work.
No, not major front office decisions in the pub. Yeah.
Right. Like, that's just, if I say the term repeater tax to somebody and you get the, I don't give a shit about a repeater tax. Well, I'm sorry. That's just, you know, it's an element to this, you know, like, go get LeBron James. God damn it.
We missed that.
Not how this works.
Uh-huh. What team are you liking right now in terms of like champion potential? Are you liking the super teams, or do you like something coming out of nowhere and shocking Miami last year?
No, I think Miami's run last year was a little artificial. Not that they weren't good. Like, they kind of had the opposite bubble. Like, the bubble worked for them. Yeah. And Jay Crowder was so good for them. Like, that was such an underrated storyline that when Jay Crowder came back down to earth, they came back down to earth. But no, this year, I mean, obviously the Lakers, when they're fully healthy, are just, I can't bet against LeBron, right? And the Clippers can look really good. The Jazz, I mean, I can't overlook the Jazz. They're the best team in the NBA right now. The Jazz are playing so, so well. So, like, there are a lot of teams that are in that mix. Brooklyn, I think Brooklyn is super scary because they can just cover up for so much with their offense. Mm-hmm. And they're starting to do some things well defensively. And as I always like to say, they don't have to be a good defensive team. They just have to be good situationally, which means it doesn't matter if they don't stop you in the first three quarters. They could be the worst defensive team in the first three quarters. And they could still outscore you.
Put up a buck 50. But, yeah.
And they know that, right. I think, too, uh-huh. Which is the tough part.
But if you have... If they can lock down for a 3-minute stretch in the middle of the fourth quarter, all of a sudden a 3-point game turns into a 19-point game, and you're like, what just happened? And then they stop playing defense, and they just still outscore you. So that can be the scariest part. So I think Brooklyn is near the top of my list. But I'm really super, super interested in Milwaukee because – this season for Milwaukee has been a lot about experimenting with things that correct some of their deficiencies.
Bringing Holiday into the lineup, yeah.
Well, bringing Holiday into the lineup, but they're doing a lot. So what was the plan against Milwaukee all the time? Build the big wall at the top of the key, you know, across the free throw line, prevent Giannis from driving, and then you just deal with the rest. You turn him into a jump shooter. You put a ton of pressure on the rest of those guys, and you deal with it. They do like a little simple thing, like they put a guy in the dunker spot, which means you can't just build that wall because he'll just drop it to that guy down on the baseline, and it becomes an easy layup. Or you collapse, and he kicks it out, and now Chris Middleton has an open three.
Yeah, Chris Middleton drains it.
Right. And so they're doing these little things that it's made them – a little sloppier, I think, and defensively they're trying some things that's made them a little sloppier. But this regular season for Milwaukee I feel like has been a big sort of training camp, and they're relying on Giannis being awesome, and they're getting through the sloppiness. They're still 22-14 and just a couple of games, out of first.
And the struggle
Giannis has been awesome. Right? Yeah. And then if they start to figure things out, like really figure out how to make that offense hum, they could be the dangerous team that Giannis is so freaking good that once they figure out how to play that style, then it may not matter. And Milwaukee could be a very serious threat. I don't think people see them as a big threat right now. I think Milwaukee could be a very serious threat in the East.
Speaking of teams from around the league, particularly the Eastern Conference, just curious on what you think about sort of Doc Rivers' impact has been on the 76ers. I mean, obviously we know about him and his time in Boston. He's always seemed to deal with superstars pretty heavily, especially here, combining Pierce with Garnett and Allen. Obviously the famous story of the duck boat tour when they all got treated, just them four together. It seems like he has sort of tapped into Joel Embiid's potential. There's always never been a question of his potential, but just about him putting it on consistently. It seems like he's injected, tapped into some higher level of play with Embiid. One move the Sixers made in the offseason, I think they really missed J.J. Redick last year in the three-point shooting.
Definitely.
Obviously bringing Danny Green over and sort of Seth Curry.
Curry move. Yep.
And yeah. I think big Doc Rivers has sort of been a very underrated offseason acquisition, especially coming from a Brett Brown. I mean, obviously he's a Boston guy. I love you, mean it. But he wasn't sort of the type of coach that Philly needed. It seems like Doc Rivers and his experience and X's and O's, he's been good. But I think he just really knows how to tap into players motivationally and sort of instill a level of confidence on the court.
Yeah, I think he's done a great job. I thought before the season, I wrote about it, before Brooklyn even traded for James Harden, I thought the Brooklyn moves and the Philly moves were fantastic. Like I immediately put, before they even played, I put Philly and Brooklyn at the top of the East. And then obviously Philly trades for James Harden, so that enhances that. But Philly, I liked what they lacked was stability. They really lacked a focus and that stability that Doc provides. He has a cachet. And then you bring in Daryl Morey to run the team, and now you've got a big-name general manager, a big-name coach, a championship-level coach, a former player coach, you know, a guy who played in, like, one of the toughest eras in the NBA. He gets it. And so he comes with a certain level of a gravitas in the locker room. You know, after years of Brett Brown, they just needed a different voice. And Doc has unlocked something with this team by focusing it on Joel Embiid. I think a lot of the first few seasons with these guys was like the Rams butting heads. And by just saying, look, Joel's our guy and Ben's there too, but we've got to make this work with Joel as our prime option and go from there. My only question for Philly is Joel Embiid's, a lot of his success has been with the face-up game. And I'm wondering if this season is a kind of like a regular game for him where in the first half of a game, he has his face-up game going, you know, hit a bunch of shots. In the second half of a game, he gets tired and he only relies on the face-up stuff and the other stuff goes away. So I'm wondering if the second half of the season is going to be like the second half of a game and if he starts to get run down. So I'm curious about Philly. If Embiid doesn't stay aggressive with his offense and if he only starts to rely on the face-up stuff, the jumpers.
My last thing I had here on the Celtics was going the second half. I think it's really exciting because, honestly, no one's really given the Celtics a shot in terms of you know, going deep into the playoffs and championship aspirations. And you see guys like Rob Williams, Peyton Pritchard be big surprises for this team off the bench. They're going to get Marcus Smart coming back to really support the two stars here. And, you know, like we said earlier, Kemba's playing a lot better. I think he's shooting really well. What's the ceiling for this team in your opinion? What do you think is good for them where they finish this year?
I think if they, the high end, and it depends, like as this team is currently constructed, I think they can win a second round series. I think, and it depends on who they match up with, but like, I don't see them getting past like the conference finals. If they go up against a Milwaukee, a Philly, or Brooklyn, I just think those other teams have too much. But if there is a trade, then, you know, maybe that changes. It depends on who they get. Maybe some of the stuff I said here was just way, way off, and Danny Ainge does go for it, and he finds something that no one's talking about. So there's always going to be a possibility that the Celtics do something that significantly improves themselves and surprises people. But if things go the way I think they're going to go, and they make a trade to kind of help the bench a little bit, and they then I think the Celtics can, in a playoff situation where they get rest and they're not, it's not the madness of everything. And if they are actually healthy, I think they win their first round matchup, and the second round matchup, I think might be a little tough, but I think they can do it. And then from there, it's probably where it ends.
I just wanted some quick thoughts real quick. I know you probably have to head out soon. Just on Aaron Nesmith, obviously just from a psychological perspective, it couldn't have been easy for him to see Peyton Pritchard get off to such a good start. The knock on him coming out, his coach, Jerry Stackhouse, former NBA player, was quoted as, you know, Aaron sort of struggles defensively. The scouting report on him, too, was he was a sniper. And obviously, people were clamoring. Some people were for Sadiq Bey. Combine that with Pritchard's success, and there was a game earlier this year where Sadiq Bey hit, like, I don't know, seven for three, or some crazy stat against the Celtics.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
Brad's sort of been playing him a little bit more. And one thing I noticed about him, instead of hanging by the three-point line, he's sort of becoming a little bit more active, both offensively and defensively, starting to slash to the basket. Do you sort of see his confidence growing, and how much did sort of Pritchard's success kind of probably hinder him from a confidence standpoint early on?
Earning a lot more minutes, too.
Yeah, I don't think Pritchard's success had any impact on Nesmith. Like, I don't think he was just sitting there saying, like, oh, man, I can't believe he's doing well. Like, I think Nesmith has done a great job in understanding what he needs to work on and getting better at it without benefit of practice time. So I think he's been able to, just from when I've talked to him, I think he's been able to keep his confidence up fairly high, but he was in a tough situation. I think we're seeing like a couple of these 4-year guys do well, and these younger players sometimes not necessarily doing as well. I'll say this. I think he's got the right attitude. I don't think he's overreacting to not getting time or missing time or sudden DNPs. Every player in the world hates getting these DNPs. So yeah, there's some of that, but I think Nesmith is going to be fine. He's shown like an ability to persevere and not let some of those moments get to him. So
yeah, I think
he'll be fine. Yeah, I think he's a tough kid. Mm-hmm. And the Celtics, I will say, do a good job when they're talking about him, of talking him up. So I think he'll be okay.
I had a final question as well. Are you like a card collector or anything like that when it comes to...
I am not.
Have you been hearing about this NBA Top Shot thing that's circling the league?
I have.
Any thoughts on that?
I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand. Like, people who do it tell me, like, oh, no, it's this. Like, I get it. But, like, I don't get it at the same time. Yeah. Like,
I think a lot of people are making a lot of money and excited.
Yeah, hasn't worked for me yet, but
I don't think a lot of people get it, really.
Here, I don't want to say this in judgment of people, because very much, like, who am I to judge people? At the same time, I think all these people are morons. because
I agree. I got some
love it.
I have one.
So Magic, you're a moron.
I am a moron, but
that's for sure.
I do think I'll make a couple hundred off the $9 pack I bought. So
yeah, we'll see.
That's not moron.
Okay, then
I'm not going to hold.
You're taking advantage of the morons.
Yeah, because I suppose
love that.
It's just a highlight, right? It's just It's just a highlight.
I guess the argument is that you can print out a picture of like someone, you know, LeBron taking a shot or dunking the same way you could find this clip on YouTube. That's the argument they're all using. I'm not going to say whether it's better or not than a card, but for the younger generation, it could take over, maybe. I don't know.
You are right.
The NBA endorses it.
But the other people buying
this
for
is why cards. Cards came about before the internet. Cards came about like. The reason why these cards were valuable, and I don't know why they would be valuable anymore, but the reason why they were valuable is because there was no printing out a picture of that thing. It used to be that's the only thing that existed, was a tangible piece of cardboard, which again, even that I was like, okay, so people decided to assign a value to it and whatever. Look, the cup that I have in front of me is worth $1 at Target. But if somebody says, I'll give you $100 for it, then that cup is worth $100 for some reason. And if that's how they want to do it, then that's how they want to do it. You can do that for literally anything. And so, fine. They created through this blockchain, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I literally can go, like I saw something about a Rui Hachimura dunk. I can go watch every Rui Hachimura dunk. I can download. I can literally own it. But yeah. I don't, because they took something. This is what I don't understand. That thing exists in other forms. The only reason why it's quote unquote rare is because they put some sort of technology on it, and this particular packaging of it is rare. But you can go download that highlight however anytime you want and watch it anytime you want.
YouTube.
I don't understand why. The packaging, like, oh, well, this is an NBA Top Shot version of it. Who gives a fuck? Like, I go to YouTube.
That cup analogy still has my head spinning. That was incredible. I'm going to leave this off here. Last question. You got a second half NBA Finals prediction?
I'm going to say the Milwaukee Bucks win.
Ooh.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Love it.
Are they taking down LeBron or Kawhi or someone else?
No, it's going to be the NBA's worst nightmare. It's going to be Milwaukee versus Utah.
Wow!
And you know why I want it? You know why I want it to be Milwaukee versus Utah?
Because LeBron clowned them the other day.
No, you know what I would love is for the Indiana Pacers to get in and go on a heater and have it be Indiana Utah, because I hate the NBA for putting on this All-Star game. I think the NBA screwed a lot of teams over. I think the NBA put a lot of player health at risk and. This big, if there's any sort of cosmic kind of basketball gods at play here, it will give the NBA the worst rated finals of all time by putting two boring ass teams in the finals. So if I'm rooting for anything, I'm rooting for a little bit of comeuppance. But I do actually think the Milwaukee Bucks will be good enough. And I think this is going to be a year where Milwaukee kind of gets some retribution. I think they stun the Brooklyn Nets. Think and I you know I want to believe that the Utah Jazz are for real, so
I hope so.
Milwaukee
too.
Over Utah.
I like it.
I love not it. I to your point. I don't know if I'd watch that.
I definitely wouldn't.
Which is good. So this is the beauty of it, because it would actually probably be amazing basketball. Like it would probably be technically it would be a version of like a great like foreign movie or indie movie. That everybody, like, the basketball junkies, like, masturbate to. But, like, general fans would be like, I'm just not watching Utah-Milwaukee. But, like, people like me are like, oh, my God, give me 20 games of Utah-Milwaukee, please.
Someone get him the lotion.
No, it reminds me of just, like, a lame Super Bowl matchup. Like, I remember the Cardinals played the Steelers, and no one thought that game was going to be any good. It was one of the best Super Bowls of all time. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
right. John, that's where you're looking at.
Yeah, John, really appreciate you coming on the podcast. Best of luck with your future stuff, and go Celtics.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Good night, thank you. So that was Boston Sports Journal Celtics writer John Corrales. I mean, really went over everything from the NBA, the Celtics, to, you know, his NBA final prediction. He's obviously upset about the NBA doing this All-Star weekend, you know, putting players at risk. And he kind of just wants it to burn. He wants their ratings to be horrible. Yeah,
love it.
I loved it. Good interview. A lot of good insight. You know, he's a good follow on Twitter, the Reds Army. I like knowing the origin of that. It's cool. Like, some of these writers that come on the show that talk about, like, their beginnings. And it's like, yeah, that was like 10 years ago. And here I am now. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, the grind. Yeah. Good stuff.
We'll resume on. So last night was a hell of a night. Not just on my liver, but we watched UFC 259. Biggest card of the year, probably one of the biggest cards in the last couple.
McGregor?
Yeah, that definitely.
This one?
Yeah, three title fights.
Yeah, fight by fight. There was a lot going on there.
I forgot there were title fights.
There was a lot going on.
And you know what? It didn't disappoint in terms of my bank account and, like, just the fights in general. I thought they were pretty good. We'll go over the title fights. So the first one was Aljamain Sterling and Petr Yan. One of the craziest finishes in a fight I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I never seen a champ. So what happened, listeners, if you didn't watch it? So Petr Yan was beating the guy who has the belt.
Yeah.
Was beating the crap out of Sterling in every single way, whether it was taking him on the ground, you know, getting him positioned, lighting his face up. And then all of a sudden hits him with this, like, flying knee that was clearly illegal. And I don't blame Sterling for not getting up at all. But the fact that the champion that has the belt, who's earned it time and time again, loses it on a DQ to a guy who's on the ground, passed out.
Yeah, he got
clearly, if the illegal thing didn't happen, he was going to retain the belt. And then he just had to give away the belt. Obviously, another rematch is coming.
Yeah, that's probably, I mean, whenever Sterling, like, recovers, like, that fight will just happen again. But
I don't think I was going to that fight. I was like, Sterling looks a lot better. You knew he was going to come out guns blazing.
He did. He had the first 2 minutes.
He dominated. I think you said it last night when we were watching it. You were like, 2.5 minutes, all Sterling. After that, like, forget about Young.
Yeah.
And I did underestimate Young because every fight he's had, he hasn't fought. I mean, he fought Jose Aldo, but that's not Jose Aldo.
It was like 2020, 2019. Yeah,
that's the non-prime Jose Aldo. But my point is saying this: Petr Yan deserves that title. He's gonna get it back the next time he fights. And you know that's not
a fact.
I think it's a fact.
I think Sterling might bounce back, dude. That was a wildly fucked up illegal fucking knee. Yeah, like that was
when
nonsense,
you say it was a flying
dude.
Knee. That wasn't a flying.
Ground, and he just absolutely cracked.
It looked like assassination.
Yeah, his head shook. Yeah. It was crazy. And, like, might give Sterling some, you know, motivation to bounce back and
that's
kick
what
his
I'm
ass.
Thinking, yeah.
I'm on the other side here. I think Jan's just going to come and go get that belt and say, that's mine. Give me that
Sterling
back,
definitely came out way too hot. Like, I mean,
you knew that. He was an athletic specimen.
Unless he was trying to get that quick. Like, which obviously some people try and do.
Because he hasn't been, like that was definitely his first title fight. And that's, like, been a thing. So, like, I mean, that was probably his first time hitting the late rounds, you know.
You can't use all that energy in the first round. Like, that Jan's just going to sit there and weather that storm and be like, all right, you're fucked now.
No, two scary dudes. Jan, there's a good chance he'll win the net rematch, definitely. But, like, Sterling might have some motivation. Anything could happen.
I would if I got taken out with
and those two, like, hate each other pre that. Like, they don't like each other at all. So, like, could be motivation to knee the fucking guy in the head. Yeah. Who knows?
content.
Yeah.
The co-main event, Amanda Nunes against Megan Anderson. I mean, we all know what was going to happen there, but to see it actually just happen in, like, 2 minutes where, you know, Megan Anderson is a scary woman.
Wouldn't
want to
fight her.
No, she's going in there. I'm like, this actually looks like somewhat of competition for Amanda Nunes.
She looked petrified.
Nunes just shut that right up.
No.
I think choked her out at, I think it was 2 minutes and 5 seconds.
Some shit like that.
Clearly knew she's going to win, but, you know, I start getting in the goat talk. Obviously, she's the goat of women's mixed martial arts.
Without question.
But now she's starting to open that barrier, and, yeah, I don't want to I don't want to compare Amanda Nunes to Tom Brady because we're having discussions of Tom Brady being the greatest athlete of all time, but we're talking about greatest female athlete to ever do. She's getting in that conversation.
Oh, she's already on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I know you
have, like, which one.
I know you have to, and I had conversations with a couple of friends last night, and I know you have to throw Serena Williams out there just because she's, like, been there and done that for so many years.
The gymnast, but, Simone Biles.
Yeah, Simone Biles, and she's, what, like, 17?
Some shit,
But at the end of the day, I mean, Simone Biles, like, I'll give you that. That's a good example. But the Serena Williams stuff where the tennis player is the greatest athlete to ever live, like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you do get the, like, I guess, like, the, like, 20 fucking years of just kicking ass. But, like,
my big thing is
you don't have that in UFC.
She's more dominant than Ronda Rousey's, like, prime. And, like, Ronda Rousey's prime was incredible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I just wonder when it ends and who it's going to be.
And Nunes is doing it against, like, much better competition than Rousey was.
Yeah, I personally, because I thought Cyborg was going to beat her. And it was over in 2 seconds.
Shout out Thomas Paluzzi for continuously betting on me that Amanda Nunes is going to lose and just giving me fucking money. Thank you.
I remember watching the Nunes-Cyborg fight. Our buddy Aaron there, he said, oh, I'll be right back, going out for a cigarette. Obviously, that dumb move.
Didn't even make it.
Yeah, comes right back in, knockout, bang. Just missed great fight.
She's good.
And one of the most accurate punches I've ever seen.
And she everything said she throws now hit. That she has a kid, she seems more, has a little more fire in her than even before. Yeah, I'll be interested.
3-on-1, Nunes she's should be like minus right? 200.
Is she undefeated?
Like, that should be the odds. Yeah. No, she's got some losses early in her career. I would say about like
21-4.
Yeah, like, and like those losses,
they might not even be, I don't think even in the USC.
Yeah, like I would say they were probably 2014 or something. Like they were before like her stride.
Yeah. So the main event was quite the surprise as well. Was it the light heavyweight championship belt? Jan Błachowicz.
However.
Versus Azriel Adesanya, who's a beast. I mean, coming in there 20-0, you know, aspirations and fighting, I think, the GOAT, John Jones. You're really talking a smack there, coming in here, trying to get his second belt, be a champ type of guy. And, you know, came up short. I think it was 2-2 going the last one.
Yeah, give or take, yeah.
Our scene last night, I didn't get a good chance to watch it, but I watched a little bit before I came in here today. Yeah, it came down to the last round. What were your thoughts on that
stuff? Then final round, championship round, Błachowicz. I mean, it felt like the second half of the fight, because he was trying to go punch for punch with Adesanya, and he was, like, winning, which was, like, very shocking to me. I thought standing up Adesanya would work him. But then the second half, he kind of figured out, like, dude, I'm fucking bigger than this guy. And, like, if I could get him to the ground. And he did at the end of the fourth round, and the final 2 minutes of the fifth round was just Adesanya on his back.
And, Magic, you were a little down about Azriel losing, right?
Yeah, I didn't know much about him till yesterday, but I liked his walkout song. I liked him dancing. He was, like, finger, whatever. He was playing the piano on it. He just looked in it. He looked like he was grooving the whole night, even in the loss. Mm-hmm. I don't think he even cared that he lost, which is surprising because now he's not undefeated. But
he is a guy that he probably could have used that. He still has his belt and his division. And like somebody like kept him down, humbled him a bit.
The post-game interview is like, I'm going to go back to my old division and fuck it up like I always do. He seemed cocky. I mean,
because I think that entire fight was just a shot at John Jones.
He fight if he like, doesn't he
was
get
like,
taken
I can
to the
win
ground.
Your title, John Jones. I can go to light heavyweight and win your title. Obviously, John Jones is heavyweight
that
now.
That guy was
but,
like, way bigger. I mean, once he got him down, it was over.
I just wonder what his next step is. Is he going to try it again? Is he going to try to go in his division and keep defending that belt? And then Song Yadong goes down, like, absolute legend. That was really tough to see.
Yeah, I hate to see it.
That's really all the analysis I have on that, but, you know, that was upsetting. Yeah. Song Yadong, like, who doesn't root for that guy?
Yeah, come on. You gotta.
Transitioning on now, Bruins now 13-5-3, third place in the division. You know, big win Friday night, 5-1 over Washington,
Capitals,
who beat them in a shootout a couple days back before. Chara going after Marchand seems like a real, I mean, if not the rivalry's already on, it's on with the Washington Capitals.
Oh, yeah. Scumbag franchise.
Yeah, so Tom Wilson, dirty hit, to say the least,
absolutely,
on Brandon Carlo at the end of the game the other night. Comes down from the league office yesterday that he suspended 7 games. And, you know, 7-game suspensions are tough to come by.
Yeah, they don't throw around a lot.
I mean, he's a repeat defender. They're trying to show an example right now that, like, they're not going to let you do that. I think it's fair. But, you know, 7 games, that's a lot.
You know, you keep repeating fucking up. Like, they're going to keep you, like, you're going to get suspended longer when you fuck up. So, I mean, he absolutely deserves it. That guy, I mean, he's the Vontaze Burfict of the NHL. Like, everyone knows that guy's a piece of shit.
But I feel like every good team in the NHL has a Tom Wilson, whether...
Oh, yeah, but I mean, they don't get suspended every year. Like, literally every year.
I mean, Marchand's is suspended a lot.
A couple times, yeah, definitely. Yeah, not recently, though.
Yeah, yeah, you have guys on each team that, you know, make your team... I mean, as much as we don't like Tom Wilson because we root for the Boston Bruins, that doesn't mean he's not good for his team. And I think what he does is really good for his team outside of, you know, putting Carlo in the hospital. They said he's not even day-to-day. His timetable's, yeah, like, not even... Anyone else have any takes on this?
I mean, that's a 6'5", like, 220 guy. You know, yeah, what I mean? Like, that's a tough man to bring down.
I'm big on Frederick, too. Frederick is just...
Love him.
At first, I was like, okay, this guy's kind of just like a wannabe tough guy. And then he turned out not to even be a tough guy.
Yeah, he just fucking down.
He just has the biggest balls I've ever seen. He will fight anybody on any given night. He doesn't give a shit. He tried dropping the gloves with Ovechkin. Ovechkin was like,
that was
no.
Hysterical. That was he was like, get away from
and
me.
And then
dude.
He hooked it right in the gonads. Yeah, yeah.
And what was it? Oh, yeah. And I mean, just laughing, fighting Tom Wilson, because Tom Wilson kicked the shit out of him. Like, literally fucking pummeled him. And he was just eating it up. And, like, I love it. Love every bit of it.
You got something, Sean?
No.
No? Not for
what
you, Sean?
Did we bring you on for?
I don't know. I think Wilson should be out for as long as Carlo's out. I don't know. Carlo's a pretty important player for the Bruins. He's an up-and-coming defenseman. When you have Patrice Bergeron pulling you to the side and talking to you, I think that kind of speaks volumes. The Bruins' D depth has been pretty tested lately with Lozon out, Kevin Miller playing on one fucking knee.
Zero knees.
Yeah, pretty much zero knees. But.
That's what the Bruins front office was going to do, though. They said, Chara, we don't have any minutes for you. We have all these young guys we're trying to mix in. Because, I mean, back to when we had Grinnell on the show, we talked about how they need to see what these young guys are made of, which ones are good or which ones aren't.
Yeah.
So when the Seattle team comes in the next year and swoops which in someone like take, a Lozon, yeah, or something like that, at least they're prepared to be like, no, you're not getting this guy.
Yeah,
you can feed this guy to the Wolves.
Yeah,
I'll say this, though. The new defenseman they picked up off of waivers from Nashville.
Right out there and fighting.
I forget his name.
Tanoli.
Tanoli. He pretty much made his presence felt and endeared himself to the fans by getting in a fight. So...
Going to what you said about Patrice Bergeron, yelling at Tom Wilson. If Patrice Bergeron hates you, so do I.
Yeah.
Straight up. If that guy thinks you're a piece of shit, then I absolutely do.
I said, like, in real life that I would serve, like, 2 years in jail for Tom Brady. Like, I'd serve a year in jail for Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah, one. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the quote. Depends what
it
is.
Yeah, whatever, dude.
Depends what it is.
Top shot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do rough and rowdy for him. Yeah,
100% that.
So on the show last week, we did our who's gonna go where in the NFL. Turns out the JJ Watt signing, we were all wrong, as everyone else I think in the country was wrong, because no one saw this coming. JJ Watt signs with the Arizona Cardinals, reunites with his former teammate DeAndre Hopkins. Matches up with, speaking of John Jones' brother Chandler Jones lining up on the other side. Two former defensive player of the years, I believe. I think Jones has one.
I'm not sure if Jones has. I don't know.
Either way, he's
in the league in stats.
He's in the conversation every year.
Yeah.
I think it's good for him to like keep himself familiar with the players, but in terms of championship aspirations and. Obviously, he got a lot of money guaranteed, so, I mean, that's what he was looking at. But at the end of the day, we said it last week, he should have gotten to Tampa. But obviously, Tampa was going to give him that money, so I guess he's not going with the, I'm going to take, like, the one-year short deal just to win a championship type thing. He's still going to money. That's what I'm trying to get
at. They might have some shit there, though, dude. That defensive line, you got DeAndre Hopkins, aging Larry Fitz, Kyler Murray. I have something over there.
Yeah, Buda Baker's a beast, too.
Yeah, even I mean, though, it's obviously though, not Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, but, like, got something.
Even though DK Metcalf chased his ass down on the goal line for, like, 99 yards, that guy Buda Baker's a beast. And then who knows? I mean, even though he's old and aging, Patrick Peterson still has something left in the tank.
But yeah, I just think the NFC West is real tough to come on. It's so competitive.
Fucking like, Stafford.
The Rams just getting Stafford. I mean, we'll see how that plans out, but I think they're going to be good this year. Seattle, as long as they have Russell Wilson, is always a contender. The Niners, unless they get Deshaun Watson. They might get everyone healthy too. That team's always like a hit or miss too.
Smoked, yeah.
You never really know. I think the Cardinals are a good team, but they should have made the playoffs this year. There was no excuse not to make the playoffs this year. That was a disappointing season when you know they had the Hail Mary against Buffalo. They had a lot of things go their way.
That was tough.
But then it came down to they had to beat a team to get in, and there was two backup quarterbacks playing. And you had to try to get the Chicago Bears to bail you out. And
well, Kyler Murray was playing the start in that game and got hurt. It wasn't, yeah.
Well, the guy came, I think he played one play, and the guy, I don't even know his name. The backup came in through like three picks.
Suckbag, that's what it was. It cost me money, that prick.
Everyone's costing you money.
Yeah. Bruins fucking.
That just sounded like Naz's like, clone twin. Suckbag costing me money. I can't tell you how many times you said that.
Oh boy!
Most of it at Kyrie Irving.
I already mentioned him during the interview. Last thing I have here, unless anyone wants to bring it up, Alex Smith, NFL Comeback Player of the Year, which honestly he won just simply for playing the game.
Yeah, as he should have.
Got his release from the Washington Football Team. I'm just wondering where you think he's going. I don't think he's going to be a starter. I think he'll be a backup. I think he should, but I think he's going to keep playing.
Does he end up here?
No,
I hope
not. You don't think?
No, we have too many Alex Smiths on this team, a.k.a. mediocre quarterbacks at best.
Yeah, I think.
If he doesn't want to retire, I would accept like a fucking backup role and just get some money. I don't know.
Yeah, pick a nice city, you know, maybe go behind Tom. Hide out.
Go play in Vegas. Get a nice massage every day at the Vegas bar.
Yeah, that's it. Vegas right there. That's a good one.
So is Tampa. Just ask Kraft.
Yeah. Sean.
He'll never have to play in Tampa, so that's a good spot. Yeah. Well, at least for a year.
No, it's not income tax either.
Folks, want to thank you for coming on the show. listening on the show. BSJ, Celtics writer John Corrales, appreciate you for coming on.
Absolutely.
Sean, great to have you in the studio tonight. I'm sure we'll be eating hamburgers or fish sandwiches at the Follow House soon.
I thought we were going to the pub.
Probably the pub. Also, maybe if Anton does it, well, we're going to have a March Madness bracket challenge that Sean just can't put $5 on like seven different teams.
You're just jealous because you didn't win.
And Sean
straight
won like
not allowed.
$20. Yeah.
When is March Madness?
It's not this weekend, next weekend. Yeah, that's all. Steel and Naz, Mass Music Radio's Pioneer Podcast. Enjoy. And we got some nice weather coming up this week. So get out there and let it rip.
Sun's out, guns out.
Yup.
Peace.